The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Well, hello, you crazy fight fans. Nice to see you again. Just shy of 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, as we welcome you to the live UFC 255 post-fight show here on MMAfighting.com. I am Mike Heck, being joined by the Prince of Positivity, Alexander K. Lee. How are you, sir?
Ready. Let's get the show on the road. Let's go. Great.
Wow. The excitement is just off the charts right now. And there's Casey Lydon joining us on the other side. I think there's a dog walking behind you. Yeah. I think AK scared him out of the room with his excitement.
Woo! Woo! Woo!
Oh my I love God. It. It's so late right now. People are going to laugh at anything I do. So this is like the best kind of time to be on, I say.
There we go. Well, the music is just sounds so darn good right now. We're all at ease. We're all just feeling peaceful right now. But AK, we have not heard from you tonight. We just had what seemed like to be a 5-hour post-fight press conference stream that has come to an end. But now you're joining us. So we have two championship fights. Both champions retained. They were massive favorites. Obviously, Valentina Shevchenko was one of the biggest favorites in UFC title fight history. The Lions got up to minus 2,500 on some websites heading in before Jennifer Maia made the walk to the octagon. So both champions retained. Interesting main card that seemed like the pacing was atrocious, but we're not going to talk about that. Prelims are fun. Your overall thoughts on tonight's card?
I thought it was a really good show. Maybe I'm having this take because I think we were all kind of the opinion that this card was being overlooked a little bit. So maybe I'm just going out of my way to defend it. But I did think it was a really good show. We had some good finishes, some good performances, some really competitive decisions. I'm not saying all those fights that went the distance were necessarily the most exciting fights, but as I sort of noted on Twitter earlier in the evening, this is what happens when you have good, sensible, competitive matchmaking. Sometimes you're gonna get fights that are a little bit of a stalemate, that don't necessarily showcase each fighter's strengths, but I thought we had at least two or three really good competitive back and forth fights. Again, plus some really good finishes. So yeah, I can't complain. I thought it was a really good show. I thought it lived up to expectations, at least the expectations we had. And as far as sleepers go, I thought it was one of the better cards of the year. So I don't know. Maybe I'm against the the general popular opinion on this one, but I thought it lived up to positive expectations.
This is a card for me that, let me just be honest, I enjoyed the card. I thought it was good. I was entertained. There was competitive matchmaking. The main card pacing was awful. It was just so bad. Like, I felt like it was 3 hours in and we were like four fights down. We still had the main event to go. Luckily, Figueiredo went out there and did the damn thing and finished it quickly. But I just felt like, my God, it just took forever. So that was like my biggest complaint. And then there's a part of me that felt kind of bad because I pushed this card like it was UFC 199, like it was UFC 206. Like, I really put it on a pedestal. And there's a part of me that feels bad about it because I don't think we didn't get that. After the first fight, I'm like, oh, man, like I'm feeling pretty darn good right now. Like, we get first fight of UFC 199 between Paul Reyes and Donghyun, Master Donghyun Kim. Was ridiculous. And so was Luis Cosse versus Sasha Platnikov, which ended up being the fight of the night. So I was like, all right, we're off to a good start. And we got some good knockouts. The prelims are awesome. And I think just the pacing killed it for me tonight. honestly.
Yeah.
I think that's really hurt
it. It was brutal. I'm pretty sure the 5-fight pay-per-view main card lasted either as long or longer than the 7-fight main card prelim card with the way it was paced, but at the very least it felt longer. Like, it felt a lot longer. I don't know if it was longer or if it was around the same length, but it felt a lot longer. And that's not how the main portion of your show should be, right? People should be kind of like, people should leave the main portion of your show wanting more, you know, not like, oh my gosh, is this over yet? Because I seriously, by the end of in the middle of Shevchenko Maya, not because it was a bad fight, but just because, like you said, the pacing of the card, I had almost completely forgotten there was another flyweight title fight coming up, and I was really looking forward to Figueiredo Perez. It's just my mind had gone to this place where we have a championship fight, it's going the distance. I was already starting to kind of leave the viewing of the card. And then I remember there was another fight, which thankfully, and fortunately for Davidson Figueiredo, ended quickly. So, and it was very exciting. But yeah, look, we also mentioned, I think, in the lead up, we would have all shuffled the card differently. I hate to take Chukagian Calvillo off. I don't know if I would have, because I do feel like fights that are potentially number one contenders fights do need to be on pay-per-view and do need to be showcased as such. So not so much a beef for that one. But the Tim Means, Mike Perry fight, once Robbie Lawler fell out, for me, you bump that to the quote-unquote featured prelim, and you move up either Brandon Moreno, Brandon Royval, which is also theoretically a number one contenders fight, or the man of the hour, Joaquin Buckley, put him on pay-per-view. But maybe he was better served on free TV, so I don't have a problem with that. Would have the Moreno, Royval. So a little tweak that really could have changed the pacing of things, could have changed the feel of the main card, but you know, what can you do?
What can you do? You know, you know what? I promise this, and I don't want to break any promises here. So let's just go right to the peeps. This is your show, all right? It's 3 a.m. officially Eastern Standard Time, and I'm not just saying this because I'm not saying this as a let's rush through this. I'm not saying that at all, but we want to hear from you. You guys have been up for a while. You guys survived like 14 hours of fights, plus a 14-hour post-fight press conference stream. Let's hear from you guys. You guys
heroes.
Let's.
You guys are heroes.
Before we go to the comments, because I can't get a straight answer on this, did Figueiredo get robbed of $50,000 tonight?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. I just want to double check on that. When you told me the performance bonuses, I actually didn't listen to you because I just assumed it was Figueiredo in it. And then I looked online. I was like, "What?" So I was double checking. I just didn't misread that. Okay, that was.
I don't think I've ever seen a champion win a fight that quickly, like under 2 minutes, and not receive a performance bonus. I'm sure I'm wrong on that. I'm sure a lot of examples will come up in the comments. But generally, when the fight is exciting, which it was for those 2 minutes, and you get a quick finish, you winner get a performance bonus. And of course, we think Buckley should have got the other one. So no disrespect to Antonin Shevchenko, but yes, when I saw that the bonuses were announced, I honestly couldn't remember how the Shevchenko fight ended, the Antonina Shevchenko fight. That's how much I think Figueiredo was robbed. I remember it being a really good performance. I just don't remember the finish being particularly like, oh, that's a bonus winning finish right there. So yeah, Figueiredo was absolutely robbed. Congrats to Antonin Shevchenko for getting the bonus, but I really hope they do right by their flyweight champion, their men's flyweight champion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you got a big fat hose job.
Okay,
big fat hose job.
Just double checking on that. All right.
Let's go to the peeves. Two Ann Stills.
Two Ann Stills, as expected.
Potentially, and it looks like Figueiredo's next title defense is set for December 12th as well, which is crazy. I knew this was coming. This was coming.
I want to stay positive, but she asked, and she's a longtime commenter.
Yeah, Sandy fam, you are awesome. Thank you for staying awake with us. And we wanted to start this on a positive note, but apparently we're not going to do that because Twitter just all over Rogan tonight. Joe Rogan makes his return to the pay-per-view broadcast and teamed up with John Anik and Daniel Cormier. And
John Anik was there tonight? I didn't even hear John Anik's voice tonight, honestly.
I know Anik pretty well. I'm not going to lie, and I'm never like he'll probably never answer this truthfully to me. He seemed a little frustrated tonight. He seemed a little frustrated at certain points trying to get in there. But AK, thoughts on Joe Rogan's performance? Thoughts on Joe Rogan being back with the broadcast team tonight?
Thoughts on Rogan being back. Thank you for the question, Sandy fam. I'll start positively. Good for him for being there, for being in the building and speaking on the broadcast. Okay, so, you know, basic function of his job. congratulations for him on the recent Spotify deal. I guess it's not recent anymore, but for being a very, very rich man and not even needing to do these pay-per-views anymore. One might say not even needing to properly prepare for these shows anymore, which I think was somewhat evident tonight. He was atrocious on commentary today. And unfortunately, he brought Daniel Cormier down with him. Daniel Cormier, super nice guy. A really, obviously, brilliant analyst when he's paired up with the right people. And especially, in, I think, in a two-man situation, I think it's when most of these fighters work their best. But boy, he's so chummy with Rogan and almost got too comfortable. And there was just moments of just dumb jokes, laughter, just nonstop. It was like you're, you know, when you're watching the NFL halftime show and like someone says one thing and they're just laughing for like 2 minutes. And it's great. I know some people like that style of commentary. I know it creates, a very familiar, like friendly, oh, we're having a good time atmosphere. But, you know, like we said earlier, there was a lot of really good competitive fights on this card that really I would have wanted to have that great, like really in-depth analysis from a guy like Daniel Cormier, from a Dan Hardy, from a Michael Bisping, you know. And we didn't get a lot of that tonight. And Rogan is such an overwhelming personality at times that it does feel like he might have screwed up Cormier's perception of things. Because Rogan, I mean, even before he became just a part-time commentator only doing pay-per-views, even before that, he always kind of had a habit of maybe seeing the wrong things in fights, maybe selling the wrong narratives. And he had Cormier biting on a lot of those tonight. So unfortunately for Cormier, I do think his performance also dragged a bit. But Rogan, boy, he didn't understand some of the scoring. He was literally asking how does some of the scoring work in some of the fights, which, again, maybe people find that funny, but I just thought it was distracting and boring. There was a lot of classic Roganisms, you know, a lot of that. So I know people like it. You know, him and Goldie, they used to bring the excitement. They're a part of the reason a lot of people got on the sport. But I just feel like we've moved past that kind of commentary now. And I feel like we can do better. So Rogan either really needs to step up his game or step aside, because he's just not bringing a lot to the broadcast in terms of analysis, in terms of entertainment. If people like a shtick, great. Guess what? He has a whole show you can listen to. It's what, like three hour podcast. But I saw the commercial.
I'm aware of it.
Yeah. So people are definitely aware of it tonight.
There was a commercial for it during the broadcast.
Some people's tweets, I think, were sponsored by that new Spotify show. So, I think I'm a little bit done with Rogan. Just a really poor job tonight, I felt. And we have so many other options now. There's just no reason to keep. If he doesn't want to be around and doesn't want to do shows and only wants to do pay-per-views, I think we should give the opportunity to someone else at this point.
I think he wants to be around, though. Like he said it many times, like he wants to be there. Like he's got the best seat in the house. The problem with Rogan is, he was pretty bad tonight. I want to see just for experimentation's sake, him and Anik, just the two of them, and see how it would go.
Sure.
Because I feel like it's just a one-upsmanship battle. Like Rogan's, you know, trying to get his thoughts in, and you know, especially when Dominic Cruz is there. Cruz will just call him right out. Like, what the hell are you talking about? And then, you know, they'll go back and forth and they'll have this like little rivalry the entire time. This one was like, who had the better jokes? Who had the better dad jokes? Who could crack up Anik? And I'm telling you, Anik was probably like super duper frustrated. Super duper frustrated.
Every time I would hear Anik, I'm like, oh yeah, Anik's there. I'm like, oh, that's, I recognize that voice. When did he show up? I think with Rogan, like he wants to be everything. He wants to be the play-by-play. He wants to be the color analyst. He wants to be the jokester. He just wants to comment on like, how everyone's tired. I actually felt bad for Caitlin when the first question was after a big victory, after you know suffering a horrible defeat against Andrade, was like. Like you get lots of crazy. Like Mark Henry says a lot of things to you. How do you memorize all those? I'm like, what? She's like, I don't know. I study. He's like, well, what does Pino mean? I was like, that's our codes. I'm like, it was just like, okay, cool win, pepperoni pizza. it was just like, oh my god, okay. This when I first started watching UFCs, I thought Rogan was great because. He was great for new fans. He introduced fans to like, oh, what are they doing? Why are they just holding each other against the cage? And it's like, oh, okay. He educated the fans on the parts that people may think are boring, they're not actually boring. They're strategic. They're grinding. This is strategy. But now I feel like we're past that. I think, like you said, we've kind of grown out of the Rogan years. And it just feels like I was listening to his podcast. Like it was one of those, what do you call it, when people just watch fights and they just I don't know.
A fight companion.
It felt like a fight companion. And DC kind of kept falling into that. I was like, dude, this isn't a podcast. We're actually, this is a sports broadcast, and please do your jobs. So, yeah. Thoughts on Rogan being back. Thank you for the questions.
If anyone is wondering, like, oh, what are we guys talking about? Joe Rogan's still good. Just watch that main event again. And watch how many times he didn't call. He got so infatuated with the narrative of Maya being a good challenger, which she was, by the way. She did a good, you know, she won the second round and she was competitive throughout. But after the second round, he almost ignored everything that Valentina Shevchenko was doing. Maybe again, I know it's boring to talk about dominance. You know, we want to move on and find a new narrative. But there was moments where she was just landing combinations and Maya would land like one punch. It's like, oh, big punch by Maya. And then just nothing. No mention of what Shevchenko did. So we're not just picking on like funny little things here and there. There's like broad, obvious things that a commentator is supposed to do that he totally missed. So, yeah, very rough. Rough night for Joe.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meh, meh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is what it is.
It really starts messing up my scoring. Like I think the Dalby Rodriguez fight, which I actually scored for Dalby, but like, and I get if you score ahead for Rodriguez, but they were like just like flipping over tables, like what? Like they just get, like even DC, like they get into this narrative, and this guy has to win, I guess. Yeah, and
stuck
like,
on it.
They get stuck on it, and it was like I was like, I thought I was crazy. I was like, well, I thought Dalby won that fight, or at least I thought it was close. But yeah.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Our friend Tristan Gordet. No more Rogan talk, at least for the time being.
Yeah.
Do you think Valentina was rusty? She did have a long layoff since having surgery on her MCL, and did say she was happy it went five rounds to confirm to herself that she was 100% healthy. Casey, do you think she was rusty tonight?
No, not at all. I think Valentina is a professional. And she was ready, and I just think that was fans not giving Jennifer Meyer her due respect. That's all that was. I didn't think she was rusty. I thought she looked great tonight. I thought Valentina actually looked great tonight. I thought she really looked good.
She dominated that fight. She lost the second round. Like Jennifer Meyer, like held her up against the fence and has a lot of strength. Yeah. Got her down. Was on top of her.
Took no damage though.
After that,
yeah.
Yeah, after that, I mean, Valentina pieced her up for like almost that entire fight. Mm-hmm. She went to the body so much. I think Anik at one point in the fifth round said like she landed 93% of her shots to the body over like 65 strikes. That's insane. that is insane. And when she hit Maya, it was, I mean, it was nasty. You could hear it. It was just rough. Jennifer Maya, God bless her. Valiant effort. Very, very well done. She went in there and did better than I think any of us thought she was going to do. Anybody, really. So she walks out with her head held high. Her stock rises even in defeat, but I don't think Valentina looked rusty at all. What do you think, AK?
I'll acknowledge Tristan's viewpoint on this one a little bit, because I'll say, as far as we know, this is maybe the first surgery she's had. I don't know if she said that post-fight. She did mention, she did talk about injury and the post-fight injury with Rogan quite a bit. I do wonder if she's the first knee injury she's ever had to address with surgery. And I think even just from a mental standpoint, that is going to affect you. And it may be one of the reasons why she went with her, you know, her grappling and wrestling more than with her, you know, just a pure striking attack, because she did initiate a lot of the grappling against Maya, who is a striker, but a striker who also has a good Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. So I do think she would have struck more if she was feeling a little more comfortable. But again, she's so well-rounded, it's hard to tell whether it is because she was compensating for some sort of injury or rust, or just because, again, she's just so skilled. And that's the avenue she saw for victory, which she was correct. She out grappled, got enough better positions, held position, top position, and won the fight that way. But I will say, I wouldn't be surprised if there were little things that might have escaped our eye, might have escaped things we'd notice that maybe her coaches saw. And again, maybe if you asked her, she would be able to say, oh, I was a little off here, my time was a little off here. I do think an injury like that, there has to be a little bit of time off, almost 8 months, something like that. 8 months, 9 months. I will say, I do think that there were things there. I can't pinpoint exactly what, but I think, Tristan, if you're saying you think that there's moments that where she was off, yeah, probably little moments, but nothing that I think severely affected her performance. Obviously, she looked very, very sharp tonight.
Yeah, I don't think she was rusty. I think maybe she adjusted her game plan. I think that's maybe more accurate.
I also think that the expectations for Valentina are just skyrocketed. They're through the roof. Like, between the head kick knockout of Jessica Eye, the Chikagian finish, all that stuff. Like, you just expect her to go out there and just smash people in all these different fun ways. You expect her to just knock somebody stiff and then do a crazy dance in the middle of the cage over somebody's lifeless body. Like, that's what we expected to see in that fight. I think all of us picked that fight to get finished somewhere within the first three rounds. And we didn't get that.
I picked decision.
Of course you did.
Oh, who won our picks tonight, sucked, by the way?
Oh, I saw it. Former colleague.
We don't need to talk about him.
A former colleague won.
Wow.
Well, you know. Oh, wow. You know, who came in last place.
Probably me.
Yeah.
It's got to be me.
Yeah.
I stuck. I stacked on the prelims.
Yeah, you had a rough start.
I had a rough one last week. I got 8 out of 12. That's not terrible. That's like normal. I think it's like average.
Hey, but I was.
You had me beat before the main card started.
No, I will say. I mean, I know a lot of people were they were impressed by Maya's performance and stuff. Honestly, I wasn't. This is the Maya I thought would show up. I thought Maya was a really good fighter, not a great fighter. Valentina is a great fighter, and this was a good fighter losing to a great fighter tonight. And I've seen her. I've seen Maya fight probably 5 or 6 times in Invicta. I've seen all her UFC fights. I've always expected big things from her. I never expected her to defeat Shevchenko, because I just don't see how she does it. But I knew she was tough. I knew it would be, you know, quote unquote, a fight. And it was, and nothing surprised me. Actually, Valentina, I was very impressed with Valentina, honestly. So
her chin held up. Her chin definitely held up, because she took some big shots in that fight.
Yep,
and hung in there the whole time. So congratulations to Valentina Shevchenko, still the champion. Looks like Jessica Andrade could be next.
I hope maybe so.
Andrade versus Murphy. We'll see. Austin Jones, how many wins does Figueiredo need to draw triple C to come out of retirement? AK, I saw you rub your hands together, so I'll let you start here.
Man, I thought they were almost like needling, like they were trying to bait Henry Cejudo tonight, because the promos and the commentary was, you know, the whole, and someone asked about this after, I think, was Davison Figueiredo, the man who saved the flyweight division, you know? And while I think, you know, Henry Cejudo, when he sort of used to sell himself like that, I thought obviously it's a bit of an exaggeration. But that's weird. That was kind of his whole gimmick for like a year there, that he was the guy who saved the Flyweight Division. And I think they barely mentioned his name tonight. I don't know if that's part of, you know, the usual UFC erasure of fighters who are no longer with the promotion or who are retired, but it was very strange. And if I'm amazed Cejudo didn't, I think he tweeted a little bit after, but didn't go on a John Jones-esque, you know, sociopathic rant afterwards, quote tweeting people and going like, ah, this is what I did and this is why I'm so great and this is why, I'm the real one who saved the flyweight division. I didn't see any of that, surprisingly. So so the question was, how many fights does Figueiredo have to win?
What does he need to
really
do?
Really none. Look, Henry Cejudo, it's the same reason Henry Cejudo really retired in the first place. Is if you gave him enough money, exactly. Casey, I don't even need to say anything. Your gesture says it all. You give him enough money, he wouldn't have even retired in the first place. You give him enough money for a Figueiredo fight, he'll cut however many pounds he needs to cut. They were saying, I think Cormier and Anik were saying after, he's probably about $170 now. But give him a few months and give him the proper incentive, Cejudo will get right back down to 125 and he'll happily fight Figueiredo. So it really isn't a matter of how many fights. He already knows, I think, Cejudo and probably his management. They already know that what the UFC is trying to do. They're trying to bump him out of the way. They're trying to forget the Cejudo era, and he'd be more than happy to come back and fight Figueiredo like tomorrow if the money was right. And if he could have a miraculous weight loss, he would do it because all the incentive is there already.
Money.
Just real quick on that. I think it would take Figueiredo winning the bantamweight title too. I think he'd have to win the second belt, and then the money. So a lot. I'm gonna say there's zero chance that fight happens, which is kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, I think if Cody winds up having the belt, the 25 belt or the 35 belt, I think maybe that could bring out Cejudo, just because he's a bigger name, and the trash talk will be easier, which means more money. But don't expect it.
I'll give
Figueiredo's next fight seems to 20%. I think Figueiredo's next fight with Brandon Moreno, verbally agreed both sides, December 12th, co-main event of UFC 256. So there you go. That is going down. So we'll add to that list then. Nick Duroff. Why do you think the refs are hesitant to take away points from fighters? So there's one thing that hasn't really been discussed, and we haven't touched on it here, and it something that kind of ticks me off watching the fight. And Davison Figueiredo is a great fighter, but he grabbed the fence.
Yeah, blatantly.
At least twice. 100%. At least twice when Alex Perez tried to take him down.
He was going down.
I mean,
Was it Herb Dean? Was that the ref in the main event?
No, Mark Goddard.
Mark Goddard, okay.
Mark Goddard actually slapped his hand out of the fence the first time, and then Figueiredo did it again. I think he did it again. Perez ended up getting him down eventually, but who knows, if he got him down the first time, the position right against the cage. Maybe that would have been different.
It definitely affected the position. He ended up in a much more, I think, advantageous position than if the initial takedown had worked.
But Casey, let me ask you, we'll start with you. Why do you think refs are hesitant to take away points from fighters?
Because the 10-point must system in MMA sucks. That's why. It just does. It's one taking away a point in a boxing match over 12 rounds, 9 rounds, 10 rounds is so much, is so less consequential than a point for any point, and especially a 3-round fight. 5-round fight is different. 3-round fight, it could be catastrophic. So that's why the refs, it's just they don't want that much influence on the decision. That's simply why. And, you read online, it was like, oh, deduct a point automatically. But you can't. You just know you can't. You've seen a million fights where a guy kind of grazes with a groin shot or grazes him with an eye poke. You get deduct a point for that. It's like, there's blatant groin shots. There's half, no eye poke, no fence grab, they're not created even, not created equal. So that's why. And it's just the rules, the way the rules are made right now, it puts the refs in a very bad position. It's hard. But I do think they are too hesitant. I can't remember, there was a fight earlier in the night. What was the fight earlier in the night? I know there were I think there were three nut shots in the first two fights.
There was three nut shots.
Yeah. I mean, it's become such an issue. There's a graphic now. The UFC had to create a new graphic.
A timer.
Oh, the nut shot timer. There's so it's I don't know. That's my answer.
Their offense. There were nut shots in that first fight, but there were fence grabs in that first fight too, right? Didn't Palatnikov get warned? Like, he was at like the final warning.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen, if you even sniff the fence, if you even touch it,
was that the one? Like, it was like a dad. It was like, you're no. I'm sending you back to your locker room. You know, if you grab that fence one more time,
Chris Tayoga.
And then Cosi got him real bad in the nutties again, and I think it was just like, all right, he suffered enough.
Alan Joban took a nice groin shot.
I mean, kind of building on what Casey said is you know, they say the best referees in most sports are the ones that you don't talk about, right? Yeah. You do not want to be the story after the fight. And if you take away a point and then it ends up in a draw, or worse, or even leads to a fight or losing a fight, you better believe that your name is going to be right up there with the two participants of the fight. Because we know most fans know the referees in MMA very well. Jason Herzog, Herb Dean, of course, Mark Goddard, Chris Tayoni has maybe the breakout name of the year in officiating. He's been officiating for a long time. He's been fishing for a long time, but a lot of people this year became real familiar with Chris Tayoni's name. So you don't want that. You know, you don't want that. You want to be commended for being, you know, doing a good job, like maybe by the end of the year. But on a nightly basis, if your name keeps popping up, it's just a terrible thing to do. So I know, and I know that's a bad excuse for not doing your job, right? If people are saying, well, their job is to enforce the rules, they shouldn't necessarily care about their egos and whether, you know, they get called out for deducting a point. But it's definitely much easier said than done. And again, unless people want to see more draws, which fans definitely don't like. I still laugh whenever fans like boo a draw. I always find that's a weird thing to do. But I know fans don't want that. You're going to see a lot of draws if you see these deductions. So yes, I do think they should penalize more frequently. And I think if you penalize more frequently, I'm kind of that old school mentality. Accidents stop happening when you crank up the penalties. That might be a little kind of a grim, mean thing to say. But I do think you'd see guys less eye pokes, definitely less fence grabbing. If it was immediate point, if you grab the fence, you would definitely see less fence grabbing. You get to see it. You still have a few instinctual ones. Guys are going down, they're going to grab on. But for the most part, guys know they can get away with that, so they're going to do it. Same with eye kick. Same with leg kick, groin kicks, and eye pokes. So I'm for more penalization. But to answer the question, as Casey, kind of just agree with Casey, you can see the psychology behind not wanting to do it.
Real quick. you don't want to end up in a Dana scrum just getting lambasted.
Yeah.
I threw this out there and it's on Twitter and it's an idea I've been pushing. I really, really think there should be half point deductions. Because that doesn't change the fight, but that is a real warning, a half point deduction. Because normally we get
half points scoring in general. It should be a 20 point system, not a 10 point system, right?
I would love half point deductions for like a groin, accidental groin shots, accidental eye pokes, and I think that's a stiff penalty, but it's a stiff penalty that doesn't affect the fight yet. So
I like it.
All right. Football 365. Mo or MO? Thank you. If Cynthia can't beat Chukagian, how can she expect a title shot anytime soon?
Is this a question?
I don't think she is expecting a title shot anytime soon.
Is this a question or a statement?
I guess it may be reworded. What does Cynthia Calvillo need to do now to get a title shot?
She needs to win three fights in a row.
Yeah.
Three fights in a row. Is it like one? If she beats, they book her against Lauren Murphy, just say that happened. Is dominating Lauren Murphy erase this loss? I guess that's why I'm.
No.
I guess that's, nope.
No, she'll have to win another one.
So two.
Yeah.
Two top five, maybe two, three, three. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it depends. Like Jennifer Maia submitted Joanne Calderwood on super short notice and earned a title shot. Despite losing her last couple of fights. So, I mean, I guess anything could happen. I guess it depends on how she does it. Like, she goes out there and if she fights Lauren Murphy and starches her and knocks her out in like 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. She gets up there because she's a fresh face. If Shevchenko beats Jessica Andrade, which seems to be the plan right now. So yeah, that would be something, but I don't know. Heat between Calvillo and Murphy. I think, unfortunately, I don't think that they can make that fight now. I think it's Andrade Murphy or it's Murphy Chookagian in the rematch. You got a story there. They fought before. Chookagian won on short notice. They're up at 135. They're both completely different fighters right now. Those are the two options for Murphy. And then, you know, Calvillo is in an interesting spot right now. Maybe they just throw her in there with Antonina at this point. I don't want to see that, but maybe that's what they do.
That was just the first name you thought of because you saw her tonight. But I know what you mean.
Yeah.
But honestly,
and by the way, let me just say this real quick. Antonina Shevchenko, great performance tonight. Awesome. Really well done. She impressed me a lot. I think she may have impressed me more than anybody on the card tonight, considering the expectations I had, only just based on like the expectations I had for her, because I've said many times on to the next one, like I didn't want to see her in there with like anybody even sniffing the top 15. I just didn't want to see it. I wanted to see them build her up. I thought Ariane Lipsky was a difficult matchup. Most of us picked the upset. Most people on Twitter picked the upset, but Shevchenko took her to the ground, beat her up, looked great. She looked outstanding. Whatever improvements she needed to make after the Chookagian fight, she made them and then some. So good on her.
I'll just go back to the original question for a second. I'll just say, besides the odds of what we said, she needs to be another contender and do so in impressive fashion. Her trajectory of her career has always just been kind of weird because she came into the UFC with a ton of hype, even though she was 3-0 coming to the UFC, but she came in with a lot of hype, kind of lived up to it for a bit, you know, good in interviews, winning fights, most importantly, and then stumbling against Carlos Barza, no shame in that. A draw against Marina Rodriguez and of course stumbling on the scale, which is probably one of the bigger issue, and now she's had to move up to 125, and then she beats Jessica Ai in her first fight at 125. Jessica Ai is a recent flyweight title challenger, and was either number two or maybe number one. I can't remember if she was behind Chookagian at that point, but she was no lower than number two, and then Calvillo took that spot. So now she is in this weird situation where, and this is kind of where I think the base of this question is, expect her to eventually get a title shot someday still, despite the fact that the results haven't always been there. So I think really I would say people need to scale back their expectations of Calvillo. I agree. She's maybe at least two fights away. Honestly, even if she did have to score like a crazy knockout of Lauren Murphy, I really wouldn't want to see her get the title shot right away. I want to hope that someone else would emerge as a fresh challenger should that scenario unfold, you know, and that'd be like 6 months from now, right? So I think two fights away is the right way to write the right number.
Yeah, they and plus Dana White said defend the title. Obviously, Zhang Weili, they're going to book her and Rose Namajunas soon, and Dana White wants to see Zhang Weili versus Valentina Shevchenko at some point. So
that is the weirdest. We'll see what happens. Is he the only person in the world that's really trying to sell that fight right now? Weili versus Shevchenko, when Weili has so many competitors right now at strawweight? I just don't get it.
So many
competitors. It's like strawweight is like the thickest division, you know, like the most stacked division in women's, and like you're like now you have a new champ, and you just go try to get two belts now. I don't get it.
That's every division. They're obsessed with super fights now. We may never again. Like I was going to tweet something out like, man, if Figueiredo just sticks with it, he could easily, you know, run off 6, 7, 8 consecutive title fights. And I'm like, he's never going to get that opportunity. He's two more title fights at most, title defense at most. They're going to insist he try and do something 135, you know. And even if it doesn't materialize, it'll put the wheels in motion, and eventually he's going to go up. So I think a lot of fans like me, they miss the days when there was just a steady stream of title challenges, not always the most exciting fights, you know, Anderson Silva, Talis Laettes, Patrick Cote, okay, whatever, not the biggest names, but it's part of that. When we look back on these guys and we say, man, remember that 10 straight championship defenses for Silva or 10 straight for GSP, whatever the number is, we don't care necessarily about every individual person that was in there. We remember the number and then we remember the biggest wins in there. And it sucks that a lot of these guys aren't allowed to build up their runs that way. I think Shevchenko should. I think Shevchenko is on that way where she has like signature wins, like Joanna, Jessica Andrade could be added to that, and then has, you know, whatever, some, you know, some forgettable ones like Carmouche and things like that. She has highlights with the head kick of Jessica. So I wish they would just let people build things up the old fashioned way, but it's just not how things are done anymore.
It's odd.
Oh, AK, you're loving this question.
No, I'll be... Go read it out. Go ahead, Mike, read it out.
What is next for Mike Perry, AK?
I've made very public my disdain for Mike Perry. I've never liked his personality. Talented fighter, undeniable. Let me put it this way: undeniable, talented fighter, and has a real instinct for it. There's some people who are just really good at something. I don't know if Mike Perry could have excelled in any other sport. Who knows? Maybe if he applied himself differently, he could have been a great football player. I don't know. But I'll tell you this: he has a knack for fighting. Okay, I'm never going to deny that. But the way he presents himself really irritates me. Of course, there's the allegations from his ex-wife, Danielle Nickerson, which I think should be taken very seriously, regardless of which parts of it you believe to be true. If you guys haven't missed that, there's a great write-up in MMA Junkie about some of the allegations against him. And again, based on his behavior, let's not forget some of the other run-ins he had with the law, it's believable. Okay, so I do not like Mike Perry. I don't want to kick someone when they're down. He fought really well tonight. And he lost. He lost, I think, a pretty clear decision to Tim Means. So I do think he should be cut. And I don't say that out of malice. So again, I've explained I do have a bias. I don't like the guy. But I also think most people don't sort out their lives in the public eye. They need to be taken away from this situation that's, I think, causing them a lot of stress and causing them a lot of internal conflict and turmoil. Let's not forget he missed weight by 4.5 pounds. So that's part of his job. So regardless of what you think of his personal life, even if you go like, oh, I don't care about that stuff, he missed weight by 4.5 pounds. That's part of his job as a fighter. So if you care about him just as a fighter, he effed up. Okay. That's there's no arguing that. And I just think he needs to step away from fighting. He needs to seek professional help. And I mean this again in a positive way. This is, I don't want to condemn him. I don't think I've seen some comments there. He had to reply to one where someone was essentially saying he should kill himself. And I think that's horrible. I wouldn't wish that upon him. I wouldn't wish that upon anybody. But he needs to, I think, step away, get professional help, focus on his family life. He has a child on the way, focus on his relationship with Latori Gonzalez, his fiance. But fighting right now, I think, is not for him. We saw the string. Check out his tweets. Check out some of the tweets he said during the weight cut. Very, very distressing stuff. So what's next? I hope not another fight in the UFC. But realistically, I don't see him getting cut. That was a fight of the night worthy performance. They didn't get the award, but it could have been up there. I do think they gave him another fight. Who? I don't know. I don't care. I don't even want to speculate. I would rather he not compete for a while and really try and fix his life.
Well, I think the first step is if he sticks around, his next fight has to be 185, right? Like we can't do this again. Like even if he says like, I'm taking this seriously, like he even said it himself, like I think I need to go up to 185. And there's some fun matchups for him at 185. Sure. Like the dude is a scrapper. You throw him in there with like any of these guys, they're going to sit there and throw the fangs at him and vice versa. So I mean, if Kevin Holland loses to Jack Hermanson, you could do Perry versus Holland.
Sure.
I'm fine with that. Holland wants that fight bad.
The scary thing is
that's Perry fighting on his reputation. That's just Perry fighting on his reputation. He doesn't deserve to fight a guy like Holland, but I understand what you're saying for the name's sake.
Right.
His name.
Well, you're giving it to Kevin. You're giving it to Holland. Yeah. That's fight Holland wants. And listen, Dana White was asked about Mike Perry at the press conference. Thinks Mike Perry is a very entertaining guy, and people would watch that fight. Mike Perry draws a lot of eyeballs. People want to hear what he has to say. It's just the way that it is.
And look, there's aspects of his personality that as a fighter that I understand are attractive and intriguing to people. I totally understand it. Even let's just say it. The coming out to supposedly the wrong walkout music tonight. I think they said he wasn't supposed to come out to Halo by Beyonce, and he just went with it. And again, if that was any other fighter, I would have thought that was hilarious. It's just in the wake of all these other things that I find so distasteful about him. I couldn't enjoy it. But again, if people did, how can I blame them? I understand what it is about him that people find intriguing. He is a certainly a memorable personality, for better or worse. And in the fight game, that takes you a long way, especially when, again, you have as much talent as he does, which I do think he is a talented fighter. So really, when I criticize, I do it from a place of it sounds corny. I do it from a place of love, though. I do. This is someone who I would want to see fixed lives, not just for his sake, his fiance, his baby that he's soon to have.
They created a new human being, a new person with part of this world. So Mike Perry, please get your life together.
Yeah, everyone who supported him and pushed him along. Again, I'm sure he's like a lot of parties. He probably had a hard upbringing, but guess what? You're an adult now. You're at this point where there's actually probably a lot of people who are supporting you and who are rooting for you and want to see you do well. I'd say probably more than wish you ill. More people than me. There's probably, for every one of me who's critical, there's probably 100 people who are like, man, I love Mike Perry and I want to see him do well. So listen to those people and fix your life for them. Don't worry about people like me. Fix your life for the people who love you and support you like unconditionally, because frankly, they're not going to be there forever. And I hope it doesn't end up hurting anyone.
I mean, I've talked to a lot of people and I've experienced this myself. Like when you're in that delivery room and you see your child born, there's a switch that just immediately flips on like for you. And you're just like, oh, everything changes. So maybe that happens to him. And I hope it does. I hope it does.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Moving on, Free Bobby, how would you judge Royval and Buckley's ceilings? Two really interesting fighters. Nice to see Brandon Royval getting mentioned in this conversation. So, AK, we'll begin with you. We started you off on the Perry one. We'll start you off with one half of Brandon on Brandon, and of course Joaquin Buckley with another performance of the night tonight, another vicious knockout of one Jordan Wright. So, we'll start with Brandon Royval. How would you judge Brandon Royval's ceiling? Obviously a very interesting fighter, very unique fighter. Tough night for him at the office tonight. Brandon Moreno gets the win. Now he's going to fight for the belt in about 3 weeks' time. So where would you put Royval's ceiling at this point?
I mean, Royval could be a world champion. I mean, I don't think that's a controversial statement at all. He's already beaten top 10 guys. He's beaten top Tim Elliott, you know, who fought for the title before. He's beaten Kai Car of France. So he finishes people. So he is a very, I'm just looking at his ratio right now. He has 11 career finishes in his, he has 12 wins, 11 finishes, 8 by submission, and only one decision. You won't find a lot of fighters at 125 pounds who don't have either way more decisions than they have finishes, or kind of a more even split, like 5 knockouts, 5 submissions, 5 decisions. So that's rare. There's a level of excitement he brings. Tonight, it wasn't his night, not even just because of the injury. I think Moreno, it's Moreno outfought him. I think he did the damage, and I believe it was actually called a TKO, not because of the injury, at least for that's what I think what Mark Goddard clarified after, though it's hard for me to imagine the fight continuing, even if they had kind of reset his shoulder in between rounds. So Royval, the ceiling is easy, I think. Could be a world champion. This is the kind of loss he's going to learn from. Hopefully the whatever happened to the shoulder is not a persistent issue. And I don't think this is the last time you see him in a number one contender's fight and then eventually competing for a world title.
I would agree with you on that. And Brandon Royval he's 28 years old, just became a full-time fighter after his UFC debut because he got the bonus and quit his job. He was he was working like overnights at a juvenile detention center. So a guy like barely slept, and he looked pretty good early on. Moreno, one thing that stuck out from my conversation with Moreno is like, listen, don't sleep on my jujitsu. I know Roy Valles is really good, but don't sleep on mine. And he looked, and Moreno delivered in a big way. And I think one thing people love about Roy Valles, he's such a risk taker. The guy will take chances to get a finish. He'll absolutely do it. And I think in a weird way, I think tonight is going to be so beneficial for him. I think this is going to be one of those things where one of the things that's kind of held Brandon Royval back is like the confidence that he has in himself. Like he's very, very hard on himself. And I think going through a fight like that, having the opportunity he had and, you know, coming up short, and there's kind of a way where you could say like, listen, it was the shoulder. I was fine. Moreno was hitting me. I hung in there and gave the man a good fight, ended in an unfortunate way. I think if Brandon Royval like takes this with, you know, takes this in stride and uses it to his advantage and grows from it, I think this could be a really good thing at the end of the day for him. But we'll see. He's definitely an exciting talent.
I think as
Casey,
long as
your thoughts on Royval.
As long as the UFC keeps the men's flyweight division, he's gonna be a name for a while. He's 29. He's just about hitting his prime. Just now becoming a full-time fighter. I mean, it's so stupid to think that how we can have guys be almost the top five, one of the top five or 10 best in the world at what they do, and they still have a second job. I mean, actually, fighting is their second job. That's not even their primary job.
But they love selling that, though. They love selling it. Can you believe he's a world title contender and also like a fry cook on the side? It's only in America. Yeah, it's the American dream. It's the American dream. And he has five kids that he has to take care of. Yeah. How does he do it?
The fact that some of the best fighters in the world still have roommates. I mean, the backup shortstop on the worst team in the Major League Baseball. Yeah. Dude, he's making $1 million.
We're not shaming anyone, by the way. If you have a roommate, if you like, or you know, whatever your living situation is, but if theoretically, if you're in the highest level of a pro sport in North America, you're usually living a little more comfortably. That's all we're saying. We're not trying to make judgment anyone's life.
So the fact that Royval just now is making enough money that he can just dedicate his life to the fighting part is exciting, and he's awesome. He's super duper. And tonight, even though he had a loss, just being a badass and like being all was like Mel Gibson and Lethal Weapon, like
Riggs,
like, pop it back in. That was just super duper, and hopefully it's not like a long term injury or something can be fixed. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can be fixed. Hope it's not a long term injury. But I'm super excited about Royval. I know Mike was super high on him. He sold me on him too, and he's good on the mic, good everywhere. Just a fun dude, and super excited about him.
He'll be fine.
Yeah, he's fine.
Someone had to lose that fight. He'll be fine. Someone had to lose, right?
Outside of the championship fights, that was the fight I was looking forward to all week, without a doubt. So I was I was bummed to end it that way. I was like, I wanted more, but you know. How it is.
Yeah. I mean, if someone told me, like, if they were giving their 2021 predictions and you said, my prediction is Brandon Royval fights for the flyweight title in 2021, wouldn't argue with you.
Yeah, sure.
Wouldn't argue with you. It's very possible. But what about Buckley? What about Joaquin Buckley, who Impa Kasaganai knockout, he'll never top that. If he does, then oh my God, we're in for something very special. But this was some knockout too. This is vicious. Against Jordan Wright, handed him his first loss. And I know a lot of people kind of question the resume of Jordan Wright heading in, but Wright had his moments. He looked pretty good at times. He was landing shots too, but Buckley, man, that dude just throws fire every single time, gets another win. So honestly, I think if we're comparing the two, I think Royval's ceiling is higher than Buckley's. I think Buckley's an exciting guy, and who knows, maybe I'm wrong about that, but Casey, where would you put Joaquin Buckley's ceiling?
I don't see him breaking top 10. I see him being a very good action fighter, and he'll be around. Much like Mike Perry in the cage, in the sense that Mike Perry isn't a high ranked welterweight or whatever weight he fights at now, but he's going to be a guy. He's always going to be in highlight reels with all these UFC fight nights, all these seeming like in it seems like he can make 85 very easily, as long as he doesn't take any heavy damage. He's a guy we'll see four times a year at least. What he went off for, doubtful. He'll win two of them, and it will be hella exciting. And that's what I expect from him. I think he's going to be that guy who leads into pay-per-views, the first fight in a pay-per-view, you know, the first fight on a main card on a fight night. You know, he's easy to sell. He looks the part, and that's what I see from him. If I'm wrong, cool.
AK, he's done fine at middleweight. Had a fun fight with Kevin Holland. Of course, the two knockouts. I feel like his future's at 170, though. That's just my take. What do you think? Where would you put his ceiling?
Has to be. He looked small tonight. He looked real small. Jordan Wright, as we said, was doing a really good job using his length to kind of back Holland off. And again, Holland's just a great striker, has so much power. He eventually figured it out and just made his way in. But he has to be considering 170 because he looked undersized. He didn't look even with Kevin Holland, the Kevin Holland fight. They look like two guys in different weight classes, which is what they are. Even though Holland, I know, could also make a compete at 170, but he looks smaller than Holland as well. So 170 is definitely his future. I agree with Casey. I think his ceiling as far as star power goes is pretty high. And as far as someone who could piece together a nice like 15, 16 fight career in the UFC, someone who's a fan favorite, he could be up there. Someone who competes for a title, it's really hard to say. It's really hard to say based on the level of competition he's faced. He's been facing other talented people, but no one really proven yet. I think Kevin Holland's maybe the best person he fought. He lost that fight, though it was an exciting performance. Before that, he fought Logan Storley and Bellator, and he lost that fight as well. Logan Storley is also a very good fighter. So he just hasn't excelled, I think, against the best competition yet, which is why the James Krause fight is so important that he gets that. Because that fight, win or lose, just the buildup to it could propel him to another level of stardom. But I don't think, he ever gets higher than like number 8, number 9, number 10. And that would be almost like with a Uriah Hall-ish situation where like he knocks out someone not expected. When Uriah Hall beat Musashi and went from like outside the top 10 to like number 6 or 7 or something overnight. I can see Buckley getting a knockout like that and entering the top 10 that way. But as far as putting together like a solid like 5, 6, 7 fight win streak that gets him up ranked and near title shot that way, I just don't know if his style is conducive for that. So, New Mansa, prove us wrong. But his ceiling as a competitor, I think, is somewhat limited.
I'm trying to imagine Israel Adesanya versus Joaquin Buckley. I don't see it yet.
So, no.
But,
some people forget or don't really know, but Buckley spent almost his entire career at 170 pounds. Mm-hmm. So, like, him going to 170, this isn't, like, a new drop for him. That's where he's pretty much always fought. So like a lot of people are like, well, James Krause can go up to 185. Buckley's like, nah, dude, I'll go to 170 and fight that guy and vice versa. So I think that is the fight to make 100%. Like you have to make that fight. And by the way, let me just say this. You can thank MMA fighting for that fight happening. Okay. Yeah. We set the table. We started it all. All right. I interviewed Joaquin Buckley. I said, what do you want next? He talked about James Krause. He said there was a DM, okay? Jose Youngs took that ball and ran with it at that post-fight press conference after he beat Claudio Silva. And Krause cut that promo, and then everything just took off. So you're welcome, world, if that fight gets booked, which it should and get look, booked.
I tried to stop the fight because I wanted Buckley and Krause to be friends. Remember, when Mike spoke to Krause on what the heck, I sent him questions before. I said, Mike, are we sure there's not a misunderstanding? Maybe some accidental fake Buckley account that sent messages to Krause and angered him. So we dug deep. I tried to stop this. We covered all angles of this. Okay, I tried to stop the fight. This is how we know it's real. This is how we know this is a real, real feud because we really dug. This was not manufactured. This was real. The interest is definitely there. And like you said, MMA fighting was on top of it. Our editor told us after that speech, after Buckley kind of did that cryptic post fight speech, like I'm calling this guy. I really want. I'm not saying who it is. And then Rogan said, "We know you're talking about James Krause." Apparently, a lot of people hit the Google machine and Googled, Joaquin Buckley, James Krause, see what was up. And sure enough, our coverage is what came up first. And apparently, there's a lot of traffic coming back in on some of those older interviews. So, yes, you're welcome, world.
Thank you, Joaquin. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joaquin. Thank you, James,
for giving us a little push.
So,
but yes, two exciting guys.
I'm going to try something because we're at the 55-minute mark right now, and we have lots of questions, but We gotta fly through them. So what I'm gonna do is actually bring up the old BTL clock. We have a one minute timer. So we fly Look through these questions. Idea. Here we go.
Ooh, did Daniel Rodriguez get robbed, AK?
No. If you listen to the commentary, yeah, he got robbed. But it was a competitive fight. I think someone brought up the unofficial striking numbers after as evidence that that Rodriguez may have had reason to be feeling like he got one taken away from him. But I'll have to see the official stats. I'm going to check that right now. So you can end my time now, Kate Short. I'm going to check the stats.
MMA decisions had this split 50-50 by the media.
Sure.
Half the media had it for Dalby. Yeah, not a robbery. I think we're good on this one. Robbery.
I thought Rodriguez won, but definitely not a robbery.
Yeah.
Good on Dalby. That was a good win. That's a real good win for him.
Yeah. All right.
Rodriguez, by the way, 83 significant strikes to 50 for Dalby, and he statistically outstruck him with significant strikes every round. But I think watching that fight, it's one of those ones where some of those significant strikes, they're not all equal. Let's put it that way. So, yeah, I agree. No, Robert.
But I can't move my clock.
Oh, wait, that's okay.
Clock stuck there or whatever.
Is Chaos Williams, Michelle Pereira the best book fight of 2020? If not, who? It's hard to... It's hard to not put Brandon up there just because AK puts so much love into that.
Oh, Brandon on Brandon. We lost Neil on Neil. That would have been up there. But Chaos Williams versus the human embodiment of chaos, Michelle Pereira, is just, it rolls right off the tongue. It's such a beautiful matchup and one that we had definitely brought up and some of the readers had brought up on our recent episode on to the next one. So fantastic. The only thing that beat it, and this is somehow magically gets booked for the end of the year, is if we get Bryce Mitchell and Ryan Hall. That would be the best booked fight of 2020. We should also give a shout out to Zombie and Ortega. I guess it doesn't feel like a 2020 fight because it was booked previously. I guess it was booked for December of last year, technically, and ended up happening this year. But I mean, I think Ortega Zombie would have to be up there. But yeah, Williams Pereira, I'll bite on that. Yeah, amazing booking.
It's a great fight. Great fight. Casey, we can go a little overtime.
Why do we have a clock, Mike? Why do we have a clock?
Yes, we have rules. Yes. Okay, I love rules.
By the way,
I love rules.
The answer is Shamaya versus Leon Edwards. By the way, that's the correct answer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yep. It's so brilliant. It's just so brilliant.
It did solve a lot of problems.
AK, thoughts on Jeff Neal versus Wonderboy and Font versus Barayas? Two big jumps up in competition for guys, and especially for Neal, could be a big break.
What's AKA thoughts?
AK?
And I think also.
Is that me?
Not you. Just answer the question.
Also known as thoughts on Jeff Neal versus Wonder Boy and Font versus Moraes. They're great. Like I said, I'm sad we missed out on Neal on Neal. I'm a little surprised that this is the fight. Because wasn't Wonder Boy being picky about some of his matchups?
He wanted Leon Edwards.
Yeah.
That's the fight he wanted.
It was Leon who didn't want to fight him.
Yeah, Leon didn't seem all that interested.
So the Jeff Neal matchup is a good one. Definitely more for Neal than Wonder Boy, but look, Wonder Boy's got to fight someone eventually, and he might not get anyone in the top 10. So you got a guy. Instead, he has to fight a guy who's probably going to try and take his spot. But I like it. Font and Moraes, great opportunity for Rob Font, and I think he is deserving of a big leap up in competition like that. So yeah, I love it.
All right.
Yep, me too. Love both of them.
Thank you, Brick Squad.
That's a badass name right there.
I saw it earlier. I flew by it, but are we gonna start calling? What's Figueiredo's his official nickname? God of War.
His nickname. Huh? Deus Taguera.
God of War, right?
Deus Taguera. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're gonna his secondary nickname will be Figgy Smalls, right?
Figgy Smalls is very good. I'm into that. You know me. I'm a resistor against. I've never been a fan of Bobby Knuckles, which is one of the fan made nicknames. I think Michael Chiesa is on social media right now saying he created Figgy Smalls, and I'm into it.
Okay, good.
I like it.
But wasn't it his opponent who came out to Biggie tonight? Didn't Perez?
Yeah,
come
I
out
think
to
Perez did come
Juicy?
Out to Biggie. Yeah.
So that's a little confusing. The branding's a little confusing, but I like Figgy Smalls. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm kind of at the point where I finally can spell Figueiredo's name, when I write up articles without having to look it up. So I'm like, I finally got it.
When I made the little graphic you see on the screen at the top, I must have looked at that like 40 times. I'm still convinced it's misspelled. I'm still convinced.
here's a tip for all you writers out there. Figurado, for one thing, in both his, well, there's two things that'll help you. One, the I always goes after the first E in both of his names, his first and last name. Okay. And the Figurado part, it's easy to remember if you divide it into figu irido, and then that's not how it's pronounced. But if you want to spell it, this is what time is it right now? This is a spelling lesson at almost 4 a.m. East Coast time.
that's what the people are asking for right now.
That's what people want. Figu irido. So the first part
in the lightning round.
There's not really an easy way to remember that. But the second part, which I know a lot of people have trouble with, as do I. That there's your trick. Figu irido.
What do you think about an all-women's MMA card? First Saturday in March kicks off with International Women's Week. Nunes versus Anderson, Shevchenko versus Andrade, Zhang versus Nama Yunus. Interesting idea.
You don't even need to have the trio of title fights. That's probably what the UFC would want to do, definitely. But I've never been a fan of three championships fights on one card. I think the only time it turned out well was the GSP 217?
The clock is moving, AK. Come on.
Help me. Break out your inner Jose Young. It was 217, right? I should remember. This is one of my freaking
205. 205 and three title fights.
Was it MSG McGregor card? What were the two?
That's not the Woodley focus Wonder of the Boy question.
And Joanna Kovalkiewicz.
Oh, yes. And those fights were not super great. McGregor Alvarez obviously was super exciting, but Woodley Wonderboy was okay. I remember one fight of the night.
You got fight of the night.
It's like a fight of the year contender.
It wasn't a fight.
Answer the question, man. We're talking about women's MMA. You're talking about Tyron Woodley right now.
Oh my God, we only have 10 seconds. I love the idea of an all women's card. It's a shame it hasn't happened yet, though there is a whole promotion called Invicta FC that you can watch on UFC Fight Pass and get all women's cards all the time, guys. But I love it. I don't think it needs three title fights, but definitely two. Yeah, you probably need at least two.
Dude, the last Invicta card was freaking awesome. The one that was on Friday night, that was a good card. And oh my goodness, what was the young lady's name? The Hurricane? I told you about my
Chase?
Chase? Hooper, okay. Hooper, Chase. Hoop Chase?
Chase is mental.
Good and Lord.
That might not be a politically correct thing to say. She is mental in the best. There's a little bit of Clay Guida in there, but maybe more psycho.
Oh,
more intense.
I was sold. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Sign this lady.
Stephanie Geltmacher fought in that card too. She had a big
knockout. Right? Invicta kind of had that Bellator thing where they kind of had some bad luck. Good cards on paper. Just didn't turn out. Yeah. This was nice card on paper. Kayla Harrison obviously did her thing. That was oh my God.
In her opponent's blood. Yeah, that was something.
You know, I always say, that was a girl stoppage. That was a girl stoppage. That was not a girl stoppage. Man, no. that was like, I don't like that woman. She must like that was yeah, so.
It wouldn't have been a girl stoppage if they stopped in the first round they should have.
They should have.
That was
a
beating.
Too long.
That was it. Kayla Harrison looked
great. Watching Invicta, people.
Kayla Harrison with elbows on the ground. Awesome. We looked great at 45. Looked awesome at 45.
Watching Invicta. UFC Fight Pass.
Let's do a couple more questions before we can go to sleep. Yeah.
So I can start prepping for on to the next one.
Oh, yeah.
Jessica's. Real quick. Talk about tonight's card.
Do you like Jessica's chances against Valentina better now?
I never thought she didn't have a good chance. I mean, I would certainly pick Valentina, but it's one of those fights where I think I would be shocked if the odds were that much higher than maybe -200 for Valentina. I would be surprised. I thought the odds for Maya were completely insane. It got as high as what did they say? -1,000 favorite.
-2,500 it got on one side.
I kept hearing people say it was essentially the most lopsided betting title fight in UFC history. I mean, I'm not sure that's true, but it felt like that. It felt like that was what people were talking about.
Yeah, thank you, Joshua Carey. To really address the question, I didn't see anything. I didn't see any like weaknesses in Shevchenko's game tonight. It's not like I saw anything. Just because Maya was competitive, it didn't make me think like, oh, Shevchenko's not as good. No, Shevchenko, if anything, this is one of those fights where you love to see them fight through a little bit of early adversity, and show why they're champion. Any champion can, you know, can dominate against the weaker competition and can be a front runner. It's when you have those rounds where like, damn, like, you know, you clearly lost that round, you know, round two, and then you come back and do the opposite. You clearly win the last three. That's what champions are made of. Not always exciting finishes, not always 50-45s, 50-44s all the time. So I always liked Andrade's chances. So I'll say I don't like them any more now than I did before.
I love the fight. Yeah. Same. Yeah, same. I know it's supposed to be this whole 1 minute thing, but I love how Valentina is on that Khabib level in the sense that if she gets hit one time, you go, oh, you know what? I think she lost that round. You know, it's like she got held down by Maya for one round. And like, it reminded me of when Michael Johnson how dare he punched Khabib once. And then if you listen to the commentary, Rogan's like, Khabib's hurt. He's really hurt. And this is like, wow, like Johnson's getting like just grounded, you know, just pounded. But it's interesting how Valentina is on that level right now in a sense that not popularity wise, but as far as like what we expect from her. She gets touched once. You're like, I don't know. I think she's lost it. I don't know. I think she's just overlooking her opponent. Yeah.
Hit that live betting. I got to get in the live betting.
Yeah, live betting. Live.
If Andrade touches you, if Andrade is landing those punches, that's what makes things interesting about that fight. Because I would favor Valentina. I'd feel very confident in picking Valentina in that fight because she's just such an intelligent striker and she would use her range very, very well. And we've seen Joanna and Jacek, we've seen Rose Namajunas use their range very well against Andrade and look really good. Of course, Andrade had the slam from hell against Namajunas in the first fight, but we saw it happen in the second fight. But Andrade is always dangerous. So there is some intrigue there for sure. But I same chances are, at least in my mind, the same as they were coming into tonight.
Yeah.
Here's my question. Why are the viewership numbers going up? What is going on, people?
I think people are waking up. People are waking up in different parts.
We have people in other time zones watching. Bless you, people. So bless you all just joining us, and bless you guys who've stuck with us throughout the night. You guys are the best. I know I'm a broken record to say this every show, but people, anyone who tunes into these post fight shows live, and anyone who watches later as well, of course, you guys are the best.
Just because he's a long time commenter, I just want to throw Al Mack on the screen.
Stop calling close fights a robbery. Yes, amen, Al Mack.
Absolutely.
Amen.
That is the theme of my robbery review feature that should be seen regularly on MMA Fighting, though not my last one, which I think I screwed up, the GSP Hendricks fight. If you guys haven't read that one, read it and tell me what an idiot I am.
Yes, and yes, amen to that too, Al Mack. 402.
Okay. You know what? Yeah. You know what I'm going to do right now?
I was going to say, that's a good question to end on. Dude, it's for you. Could just put a quick thank you. Yes, play us off. Oh, they're playing us off the stage. Sorry, we would love to answer more questions, but they are playing us off.
I apologize.
This is the overtime music. That means we're going an extra hour.
Oh, no.
So, I'm just kidding. That's it. Listen, we've been talking about this for a while. The press conference stream, you know what I mean. It took forever. It's a long night. But we appreciate you guys joining us. Any final thoughts, AK, before we say goodbye?
No, it is 4 a.m. I'll agree. To acknowledge that last question, yeah, it's 4 a.m. On the East Coast. Even on the West Coast, it's 1 a.m. on a Saturday. You should either be I was just saying out partying, though. I guess we can't do that these times. But you should either be chilling and watching a movie, or I guess you're staying up with us, and I can't complain. So.
I'm under curfew. I can't leave this house.
This is true. There's really not much else to do than hang out with us.
It's a tyranny out there. It's a dictatorship, guys. So I'm stuck here, guys.
Next week, what's going on next? What's next week's card, Frank?
Blades versus Lewis.
Oof.
In the in the small cage.
What else is on the main card?
Well, we have plenty of time to talk about that. We have plenty of time.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. We got between the links. You hear all about between the links. Great. Yes. So there's only four cards left for 2020 for the UFC. We've just gone on this incredible run with four fight cards left, and it all ends December 19th. That fight card is bananas.
Are there any more Bellator cards?
We'll talk more
cards?
About that. December 10th.
Yeah. Who's that?
That is Ali Malay McFarlane versus Julian Velasquez.
The other flyweights. Flyweight December. Well, it's not December yet. Whatever, you know what I mean.
Juliana Velasquez finally got the title shot, for the love of God. She deserves a title shot for 2 years now.
Flyweights rule. We know this. This is not a secret. And we definitely saw a lot of great flyweight action tonight.
We did.
That's right. We sure did. All right. We are out of here. For Casey Lydon, AK Lee, I am Mike Heck. Normally I would say good night, everybody, but good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.